OTC is go.
Frankfurt is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety cost is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDR is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Brightside Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots, the Thanksgiving special on RSP, RSPRadio1.com, Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Yeah, it's Tuesday night, the 24th of November. Diane, we're just a couple of days away from Thanksgiving itself.
Yeah, tomorrow's all the cooking day.
All the prep day, kitchen prep.
Yeah, you know, my once or twice a year cooking.
You know, I remember as a kid, my mother would not do any advance cooking prep for Thanksgiving. She did it all on Thanksgiving Day. And it seems to me the best way to go about it is take your time the day before, put together whatever it is that you're going to have, whether it's the mashed potatoes, the sweet potatoes or yams, the green bean casserole. Now, if you do the green bean casserole ahead of time, don't put the fried onion things on top yet, because then they just get soggy.
That's the one thing I don't make ahead of time, because you leave the green beans soaking in milk and cream of mushroom soup, and it's just like a big mushy mess.
Yeah, it's easy to make that the day of. I mean, that's a quick deal, you know.
Absolutely.
But whatever else you have, you know, on the menu, whatever you can make ahead of time, you make it a day ahead, you put it in the fridge, and then the day of, you just pop it in the oven, get it nice and hot, and serve.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Seems to me like an easier way to go about it, but my mother did everything on Thanksgiving Day itself, but she would start at like 6 in the morning.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
And then she'd be in there in that kitchen. We'd eat probably around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And she'd be in that kitchen from 6 until 2, you know, like, man, you're literally ruining half of your Thanksgiving Day doing that.
Yeah, but some women like doing that. And, you know, if they like it, more power to them.
Well, some men like to cook too, you know. I happen to be one of them.
True.
You know, but still, make stuff ahead of time if you're doing the Thanksgiving feast, and you know, and then kind of kick back and relax a little bit, you know, until you're ready to eat. I mean, that's the way to go about it. It is the Thanksgiving special. Folks, we're going to start with just some chat about some of the news things that are going on right now. But when we get into the meat of the show, and I don't know if you're a white meat or a dark meat lover out there, but the meat of the show, Diane's covering on Thanksgiving, okay, kind of a historical look back at Thanksgiving number one.
Mm-hmm.
Things people probably didn't realize about Thanksgiving. It's going to be very interesting. I will be covering Thanksgiving with COVID stuffing.
A
look
snarky.
At this. Yeah, a little snarky.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a look at this Thanksgiving 2020.
Which isn't going to be fun for a lot of people.
You know, I just covering even local news, Nebraska news, South Dakota news, as I do every day, even some of the stories I'm seeing coming across there. I mean, I don't know where everybody's listening from, obviously. We got people listening all over the world. I mean, this is the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But folks, if you live in a blue state or a blue city within a blue state, give the finger to the mandates, the restrictions, the lockdown. Give them the finger. Do Thanksgiving the way you always do Thanksgiving. Screw the rest of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm lucky I live in a state where our governor is, you know, has working brain cells and he is not closing anything down. I'm very thankful for that because, you know, we've all been locked up basically since March. Right. And enough is enough.
Well, you know, here in Nebraska, our governor has working brain cells. What he lacks is a spine and a set of cojones.
Well, then what good are his working brain cells?
Well, not much. I mean, right now we're at about 23-24% on hospital COVID occupancy. And Governor Ricketts here in Nebraska says if it gets to 25, we're bringing back all the restrictions we had early in the spring. It's virtually going to turn restaurants into takeout only. You can't have more than 10 people at an indoor gathering, 20 people at an outdoor gathering, so on and so forth. You know, here's the thing. Restaurant owners, if they're still in business after the spring, another setback like this, another you can't have people in your restaurant mandate, is going to run them right out of business.
Absolutely.
You know, and other stores, other operations are going to be the same way. This is just butt stupid.
The whole thing is butt stupid. And I think there's more behind this than people suspect.
Right.
In fact, that's going to be my comeback article.
Well, and folks, we ought to let you know, we're not going to be here on Friday. That's the day after Thanksgiving.
And we've always done that for like 6-7 years.
Right. That's nothing new. Next Tuesday, I've got a public hearing I need to attend up here in my county, so we won't be here on Tuesday. We'll be back a week from Friday, which I believe is December 4th.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's when we'll be back on the air, so... just a little housekeeping there so everybody knows. Of course, the two stories that are dominating the news, COVID-19 and the freaking election.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the COVID thing, all around the country, people are starting to panic buy again. You know, there's talk about lockdowns and shutouts and in California and New York and Chicago and different places, it's already in effect. You know, and people, I'm telling you, even Democrats are going to get pissed now.
Well, some of them are starting to get pissed, and rightly so. But you know what? The only thing that really I'm concerned about right now is... yeah, I'm going to have Thanksgiving and all that and do the whole turkey thing. But I worry, terribly worry, what's going to happen to this country with Joe Biden as president because, you know, he started picking his cabinet and he picked, you know, Lurch, John Kerry,
yeah,
to be the special envoy for climate change, you know, the weather.
Good. That's great. Can we send him to the sun?
I wish.
Because, I mean, the sun is in charge of our climate, so let's send him there.
What Biden is doing is he's actually picking so far all the people from the Obama administration. And if people think back, I said on day one, he will be Obama's de facto third term in office, and that is coming to be true.
Here we go.
You know,
I mean, it is what it is. Now, before our listeners want our heads on a silver platter, okay, we are not convinced that Joe Biden is going to wind up being the president. Okay,
well,
it's an open-ended question. All right, at this point, it's still open-ended. We're going to get to that here in just a couple of minutes. But, you know, I'm just saying, we have not conceded. Okay, the president has not conceded. He is the, you know, Biden, that dementia-ridden piece of crap, is the presumptive, use your air quotes, presumptive president-elect. And that's as far as we're willing to go at this point.
I'm not even willing to do that. Speak for yourself. To me, he's fraudulently in place. First of all, military votes, many, many, many have not been counted. And I don't think any elections should be certified until every single military vote is counted. Number two, the fraud, the evidence for fraud is overwhelming. I've written pieces about it.
Right.
Many people have written pieces about it. The proof is there. But then again, when you have people, unfortunately, like Sidney Powell, going out to the front and saying all these things, not knowing when to keep her big mouth shut, it kind of took the sail out of the momentum. Now, that doesn't mean by any means that Trump has conceded. He hasn't. But he has been forced to start a transition, step one.
Right.
And we have to just wait and see. I mean, this woman is now saying next Wednesday, the Kraken is going to be released. Well, you know what? Release it tomorrow.
Yeah,
why wait till next Wednesday? All she's doing is getting people's hopes up with no substance behind her. Tucker Carlson was right.
I can see where she could be a pain in the butt, you know, when Tucker calls and says, you know, hey, we'll give you a lot of time on the show. You know, let's get this evidence. I can see her, you know, pulling a diva moment, you know, at that. I don't think Tucker was completely off base.
I don't think he was off base at all.
You know, and then there's also news that lawsuits are going to be filed in the next day or two. And we don't know how much of this is true and how much isn't. There's no way to verify any of this at this
point. Right. Right. Nothing.
Yeah. What we do keep hearing is that more and more and more ballots are being found, just magically found.
150,000 were found in Wisconsin today. And yet they certified the election. That is fraud on more levels than just, you know, Biden and voting. It also has to do with election officials certifying counties where the ballots are still in the waiting.
Yeah. Now, you know, we hear about stuff in Pennsylvania. We hear about stuff in Arizona. We hear about stuff in Michigan. Right? We hear about stuff in Georgia.
Yep.
Michigan. Here's something that I found from Michigan. Okay. Cluster votes.
Mm-hmm.
In Wayne County, Michigan, the largest number of cluster votes came from a psychiatric hospital for patients with severe mental illness.
Well,
now,
there you go. Democrats.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Okay, Sarah Eaglesfield, she's a data scientist, and she put out a tweet earlier today that she had uncovered some information looking into the Wayne County, Michigan voter data from the November 3rd election. And her data so far explores what they call cluster votes in Wayne County, Michigan, where hundreds of affidavits have been filed with eyewitness accounts of rampant voter fraud and intimidation by paid election workers and officials and Democrat activists that were present at the TCF Center where absentee ballots were being processed. Now, she put out in this tweet the top five places where cluster votes came from in Wayne County. Number one was a psychiatric hospital. Okay. Number two was an apartment block, but no apartment number.
Okay.
Number three was a convent.
Oh, okay.
Now, cluster votes are where all these votes have the same address on the mail-in, right? So number three was a convent. Number four was the Four Seasons Care Facility. And number five was a homeless drop-in center. Okay, this is the kind of stuff that they're uncovering. This is, I mean, look, do you really think a whole bunch of people at a psychiatric hospital for people with severe mental illness were casting votes? Do you really think the number three cluster vote in that whole county was a convent?
No.
I mean, come on, people. You know, this is common sense stuff here.
Exactly. And yet, you know, no one is putting a stop to it. They're just, oh, well, we can't say there was voter fraud. They're making all these excuses. It seems none of our elected officials have any courage, guts, balls, whatever you want to call it, to stand by their convictions of knowing that this election was stolen.
Right.
They all keep their mouths shut. And then we have the ones that, you know, are calling Biden president-elect Biden, which is a slap in the face to President Trump.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, when you get right down to it, it's absolutely stunning.
It is.
We're seeing this kind of malfeasance in one battleground state, one key state after the next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not seeing it in non-key states. We're not seeing it in non-battleground states.
Nope.
But in those blue states and those blue cities that are so vital to the election, that's where this crap is taking place. It cannot be a coincidence.
No. And it's the same states. Remember my article from last week? That Hillary contested in.
Yeah.
I mean, very odd.
Yeah. You know, when you start looking at the pattern, and that's what we keep finding, is patterns in all this. Statistically, these patterns could not happen without voter fraud.
Correct.
I mean, it's not like, well, you know, it could not necessarily have to, but, you know, it's on the board. It's not like that. The patterns here, the balance is so far off that it literally defies the over-under. I mean, it completely blows it out of the water. These things could not possibly happen the way they're happening without voter fraud.
Exactly. But nobody has the guts to stand up and say enough. None of them. None of our elected leaders. They're all making excuses, including those on our side.
Yeah, which doesn't seem to make any sense to me. No. I mean, look, if you're going to follow through with this, follow through with it. Or don't even start it, okay? What's at stake here is every election in the future.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't care what kind of a constitutional crisis you think might arise, if you see this through to the end and prosecute those who are guilty of voter fraud. I don't really give a damn what constitutional crisis you think might crop up because of this.
Right.
Any constitutional crisis is better now than simply throwing the integrity of the election process of this country in the trash forevermore.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and if you deal with the crisis now, you'll never have to deal with it again.
But the thing is,
put in place the process to deal with it. Yeah, it's going to be a tough thing to deal with. But by God, deal with it.
Right. Otherwise, we're going to see a civil war in this country.
Yeah, we're really edging towards that. I feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know I'll fight if I have to. Because I'm not, you know, going to surrender to these Democrats.
Well, look, let's get one thing straight. We're not talking about Democrats here. We're talking about socialists and Marxists, which are kissing cousins of communists.
Right.
You know, we're not talking about Democrats. Democrats would be people like Joe Manchin. Democrats would be people like JFK. Democrats. I don't know if people remember Tip O'Neill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, back when Reagan was the president, Tip O'Neill was the Speaker of the House. He was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those are Democrats. We're not talking about
Absolutely.
Democrats here. AOC, Ilhan Omar, the Squad, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris. We're not talking about Democrats here. We're talking about Marxists, socialists, and borderline commies.
Mm-hmm. They're not even borderline. They're overt commies.
You know, it's...
Seriously.
It's a stunning thing. And when you look at what Biden's talking about right now, what his cronies are talking about, I mean, for God's sakes, the Dow closed over 30,000 today.
Yay!
I mean, that's historic.
No, It did reach 30,000 a couple of months ago. It didn't close at 30,000, but it did go over 30,000.
That's what I'm saying. But today it closed over 30. Okay?
Right.
That's huge. I mean, especially when you take a look at this year and all the crap. I mean, the literal crap storm this country's been through this year. To make that kind of a rebound after the spring and summer and early fall that this
right.
country went through economically from a business standpoint, to make that kind of a rebound as quickly as it did,
mm-hmm.
that's astounding. That's astounding. Now, I don't care really whether people want to take the COVID vaccine or whether they don't. And I understand the people that don't want to take it. Yeah, I get it. You know, I mean...
Well, a report came out last night. What they're not telling you about the COVID vaccine, it's not a single vaccine, folks. It's a double. You have to go back. And there are side effects in almost everyone in the test group who took it. In other words, what they're saying is severe body aches, fever, and splitting headaches. It usually goes away in a day. In other words, this vaccine is actually giving you a manipulated dose of the virus. Now, this is in the control group who have experienced these side effects. What happens to someone with a pre-existing condition who gets these side effects? Is it going to go away in a day or is it going to linger? This vaccine is not around long enough to see the whole ramifications of it.
Right.
I, for one, am not taking it.
I agree with you. I mean, but, you know, like I said, I understand people who say, no way, I'm not taking that. I don't trust it yet. It hasn't been around long. I get it. Okay? But whether or not you take it is secondary to the point that a vaccine has been developed literally at warp speed. Okay, we don't know what the long-term effect of the vaccine is yet, but we've never gotten close to anything in this kind of time frame in the past. It's astounding. And when you look at the different manufacturers, when you look at the different manufacturers that have been able to do this, you know, they were able to do this by having restrictions lifted and being turned loose to do what they do. Biden's going to roll all that back so that, you know, even the advancements that have been made are going to be lost.
That says a lot right there, the fact that this was developed so fast. That means that other diseases could have gotten attention too and weren't.
Right.
This was fast-tracked for political reasons.
Well, fast-tracked, okay. I agree.
And not, you know, on a bad way from Trump's end, but in a very bad way from the Democrats' end, because they were hoping that it would be announced by Biden, not by Trump. This vaccine was politically motivated. We didn't need this vaccine. What we need is an antidote. Totally different, folks, and I'll get into that next Friday. And what we needed was to allow herd immunity to take effect, like it did in 1917 and 1918 with the Spanish flu. There was basically no medical intervention back then because they didn't have it. And within a year's time, it was gone, and it has not come back because the population built up immunities to it. Right. They did not allow that to happen here, and they have created more problems than was ever needed.
But the point is, if they can come up with this vaccine in that time frame, and they did, with these restrictions lifted, what else can the medical community do? What else could they do at warp speed that would be beneficial to all of humanity?
They've wasted half a century trying to find something for cancer, a vaccine, whatever. They would have been better served by finding a vaccine for something like that than for a virus that would have eventually gone away on its own.
I understand, but you're missing my point. The point is, if they can do this in this warp speed time frame, what else could they do in a warp speed time frame now that the restrictions have been lifted that they won't be able to do when the restrictions are put back on?
If you'd let me finish my statement, I would have told you. Okay, but now it doesn't matter. Okay, we never needed a vaccine against COVID. The money spent for this vaccine are basically useless because next year, if it does come back, it's going to come back in a different form, rendering this vaccine basically useless.
Right.
In
right.
fact, it could be so useless that it could leave the person open to an opportunistic second infection.
Right. And I'm not arguing that point. Okay. I'm not arguing that point at all. What I'm saying is you lift the restrictions, you turn the medical community loose. They can do great things in a small amount of time. You slap those restrictions back on, and suddenly they're not able to do great things in a short amount of time. We're right back to where we were. Take the COVID vaccine out of the equation and just look at the restrictions. Restrictions on, restrictions off. With restrictions off, the medical community can do great things very quickly. Restrictions on, they can't. And what Biden's going to do is put the restrictions back on. And that's where I see the problem. I really don't care about the COVID vaccine. I really don't. But what I'm saying is, once you put those restrictions back on, Biden says he's going to, all of a sudden you grind medical progress back to a halt.
Well, Biden's going to be putting restrictions on a lot of things. We can kiss our space program goodbye. Yep. We can kiss medical research goodbye. We can, you know, get used to electric cars because fracking is going to be gone. The oil industry is going to be destroyed. But you know what? If that's what these people really wanted, these Democrats really wanted, let them live through it. We don't have to. We could go about living our lives and ignoring them.
Well, and I think that's what people are going to do. I think that's what a lot of people are going to do, you know, and good. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, I've had it with this crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen 4 years of prosperity. We've seen 4 years of surging technology, surging research, surging science.
Peace, economic prosperity, Middle East peace, troop withdrawals, you know, or drawdowns. We've seen all positive things under President Trump. But because the stupid Democrats don't like the way he operates, they don't vote for him. He right. needs Twitter because the news media will not support him.
They won't support the truth.
Correct.
You know, they may not like the messenger, but they won't even support the message. And right. And that's a sad thing. Folks, we've gotten here to the bottom of the hour. It is the Right Side Patriots Thanksgiving special. We're going to take a bottom of the hour break. When we come back, Diane's doing On Thanksgiving, a retrospective of the first Thanksgiving with information I'll bet you didn't even know. Then a little bit later, about a half an hour from now, Thanksgiving with COVID stuffing. We're going to leave you with some laughs at the end of the show. So, folks, you stay there. We'll stay here, and there'll be more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots, the Thanksgiving special. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. You're listening to rspradio1.com, and we thank you for it. It's Tuesday night. It's the 24th of November. That means in 2 days, it's Thanksgiving Day. Now, if you're going to take a look at the history of Thanksgiving, you may think you know a lot. But I guarantee you, you're about to hear some things about the first Thanksgiving that never made it into your history books but are nonetheless true. Diane, you have tackled On Thanksgiving.
Yes, and let's start by saying the Thanksgiving story as we know it began on July 22, 1620, when a group of English colonists known as Pilgrims gathered in the Dutch port city of Delfshaven to board the Pinnace ship Speedwell. Sailing from there to the British city of Southampton, these colonists met up with others who had already boarded the Mayflower, the Speedwell's sister ship, if you will. Departing Southampton on August 6th, the passengers and crew were hoping for a swift and uneventful ocean crossing to Virginia. Sadly, though, that didn't happen, as the Speedwell leaked not once but twice, forcing both ships to turn back. And the Pilgrims, who didn't call it quits while docked in the port city of Plymouth, waited anxiously while the Speedwell's remaining passengers and cargo were transferred to the Mayflower, an already seriously overcrowded ship, a ship which then became their home for almost a month. Finally setting sail for America from Plymouth on September 6, 1620, the now 102 passengers, along with a crew of 37 men, headed by Master Christopher Jones, were packed tight in the small ship, a ship that measured about 100 feet long from stem to stern and just 24 feet wide. And while the crew was housed in small cabins above the main deck, the Pilgrims and the others on board, those the Pilgrims called strangers, were forced to live in suffocating, windowless spaces no more than 5 feet in height, spaces that existed between the main deck and the cargo hold. And while the first month of sailing saw mostly calm seas, by early October, an, quote, unrelenting series of North Atlantic storms tossed and battered the Mayflower for weeks on end, forcing the crew to lower the sails and let the Mayflower bob helplessly in the towering waves, end quote. And how do we know this? In the only surviving journal, a journal entitled Of Plymouth Plantation, authored by Mayflower passenger and Mayflower compact signer William Bradford, who years later became the 30-year governor of the Massachusetts Plymouth colony, was also this vivid description of the actual 66-day crossing, writing that, quote, they were encountered many times with cross winds and met with many fierce storms with which the ship was shroudly shaken, and her upper works made very leaky, and one of the beams in the midships was bowed and cracked, which put them in some fear that the ship could not be able to perform the voyage, end quote. And this allowed us to visualize just how perilous the Pilgrim's journey was. And if this wasn't bad enough, seasickness and other assorted ills permeated the entire voyage. Yet surprisingly, only one of the Pilgrims on board died during the actual crossing itself. However, 52 of the 102 passengers aboard, consisting almost equally of both Pilgrims and strangers, died during their first winter in Plymouth. But now it's time we separate fact from fiction, first in regards to exactly why the Pilgrims came to the New World, and second, to understand that Thanksgiving, as we celebrate it today, is really a blend of the Pilgrims' New England custom of, quote, rejoicing after a successful harvest, end quote, something actually based upon ancient English harvest festivals, and, Craig, the Puritans' tenets of Thanksgiving being but a solemn religious observance combining prayer and, to a much lesser degree, feasting.
You know, over the centuries, the story of the first Thanksgiving, the Pilgrims, you know, the whole thing has kind of been consolidated from a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit everywhere. One of the things that everybody kind of believes almost innately at this point is that the reason they came over here was religious. Was it?
No. Okay. And we have to know that those we call pilgrims, contrary to popular belief, religious freedom was not, I repeat, not the deciding factor as to why they came to the New World, for religious freedom was something the pilgrims enjoyed for more than a decade before ever setting sail on the Mayflower. How so? While we know that in the 1500s, England broke away from the Roman Catholic Church and created a new church called the Church of England, what many don't know is that those we refer to as pilgrims actually were separatists, as in those who rejected the new church. And it was a small group of separatists who left England in 1608 and found both sanctuary and religious freedom in the Dutch city of Leiden, a city that was far more religiously diverse and tolerant than were those in England, a city where, according to separatist member Edward Winslow, they enjoyed, quote, much peace and liberty, end quote. So logic alone should then dictate that religious tolerance and freedom was not the driving force that drove the pilgrims to risk their lives, first in a dangerous ocean crossing and then in the wilds of an untamed land. So what did drive the pilgrims to America? Simply poverty did. For the reality is that the pilgrims were actually what we now call, quote, economic migrants. Possessing religious freedom in Leiden was surely a good thing, but living in overt poverty was quite another. For the pilgrims, who were farmers in northern England, now being but low-paid laborers who work long hours weaving, spinning, and making cloth, was what their fellow separatists, still home in England, were not willing to do. In fact, in his Of Plymouth Plantation Journal, William Bradford also wrote that, instead of joining their fellow separatists in Leiden, quote, some preferred and chose the prisons in England rather than this liberty in Holland with these afflictions, end quote, meaning living both in poverty and what some pilgrim elders considered to be moral debauchery. And as time went on, poverty became more widespread, for not only did the all-important wool market collapse, but the 30-year wars were looming large. Couple that with pilgrim elders fearing that Dutch society was, quote, corrupting their children, end quote, which again can be witnessed in the words of William Bradford, who wrote in his journal that their children were, quote, drawn away by evil examples into extravagant and dangerous courses, end quote, as well as losing their English identity. Now being unable to return to their beloved England for fear of arrest, the pilgrims instead looked to the economic opportunities the New World offered them. And with English merchants already having financed numerous colonial settlements, the pilgrims embraced not only the economic opportunities afforded them, but the ability to continue to freely worship and to preserve their and their children's English identity. And after receiving a patent from the Virginia Company to establish a settlement within its jurisdiction, the merchant adventurers, a group of 70 London businessmen, supplied the capital needed to finance the Pilgrim's Quest and did so by purchasing shares in a joint stock company. The backers paid for the Mayflower, its crew, and a year's worth of supplies, and in return the Pilgrims were required to work for the company during their first 7 years in America. But even here the pilgrims saw economic pluses, because every colonist over the age of 16 would be receiving one stock share for their having emigrated to America and for working the land, land which would then be theirs along with any future profits garnered after their 7-year contract was up. Life in New England colony was hard, and it took years for the pilgrims' investors to garner any profits at all, while it took the pilgrims until 1648 to pay off their debt. And besides, by the early 1630s, the Puritans had established the more successful Massachusetts Bay Colony, where by 1691, the two colonies, together with other lesser colonies, merged to form the province of Massachusetts Bay. So why even mention the Puritans then? Because it was the Puritans, not the Pilgrims, who came to America solely for religious reasons. And, Craig, it's the Puritans' religious tenets that Thanksgiving really emanates from.
Okay, so before we get to that element of the first Thanksgiving, you know, you would think the Pilgrims and the Puritans would have a common need to work together, to strive together, and to be cohesive in order to make this new venture work. And that's kind of the impression we get through that amalgamation of consolidated, almost romanticized telling of the story that's occurred over the centuries. But that's not really how it was, right?
No. And I'm going to tell you how it was. First, it's important to know that while the Puritans believed they could still live the, what they called, congregational way within their local churches as per their own ecclesiastical tenets and do so without having to completely cut ties with the newly established Church of England, the Pilgrims believed that any membership in or dealings with said church violated biblical precepts for true Christians, thus causing a permanent rift between the two groups. And second, while the economics of poverty was the driving force that drove the Pilgrims to America, the Puritans, who were not poverty-stricken, saw investment opportunities in owning land in America and believed that by being far away from England, they could bring people to what they considered to be the, quote, ideal English church. Simply, the Puritans were religious missionaries with conversion on their minds who came to the New World, quote, with money and resources and divinely ordained arrogance, end quote, while the Pilgrims were more accepting of religious tolerance thanks to their time spent in Leiden. To the Puritans, their and their church's way alone was the only right way to salvation, and so it remained. So how do these religious differences between the Pilgrims and the Puritans affect the story of Thanksgiving? First, know that in no way do these differences negate the basic premise of the first Thanksgiving being a harvest feast. Said feast did indeed take place, but not in November, as Thanksgiving is celebrated today, but in October, with it lasting 3 days and being attended by 19 Wampanoag Indians and 53 Pilgrims. But still some minor revisions to the story are needed. Yes, the Wampanoag, who for generations already had harvest feasts of their own, broke bread with the Pilgrims, but little known is that this particular feast had as much to do with a peace treaty being made between two nations, England and the Wampanoag Nation, as it did with the harvest success of the now one-year-old Plymouth colony itself. How so? This can be explained in a letter written and sent to a friend in England by aforementioned Mayflower passenger and feast attendee Edward Winslow, who wrote, quote, "And God be praised, we had a good increase. Our harvest being gotten in, our governor, William Bradford, sent 4 men on fowling, that so we might after a special manner rejoice together. And that these things I thought good to let you understand, that you might on our behalf give God thanks for hath dealt so favorably with us," end quote. Boy, that old English is tricky.
It is tough. That stuff is hard to read. And I've read that whole thing, and you got to labor over that.
Yeah, because it's not the way we talk.
No.
Not at all. But know that this letter alone explains the reality and truths of the first Thanksgiving, as it being but a simple harvest feast, and the welcoming of peace between two peoples, which a latter-day poem in politics helped to morph into what has become a truly American holiday. And that poem was Longfellow's, quote, The Courtship of Miles Standish, written in 1848, along with the 1855 recovery of Governor William Bradford's lost journal of Plymouth Plantation, both of which piqued public interest in the Pilgrims and the Wampanoag Indians, piqued that interest to where Thanksgiving, as we know it today, became nationally important. And while the Continental Congress had proclaimed the first national Thanksgiving in 1777, it was not the food-laden, joyous Thanksgiving we know today, but an austere and somewhat somber event where religious leaders recommended that, quote, servile labor and such recreations, although at other times innocent, may be unbecoming the purpose of this appointment and should be omitted on so solemn an occasion, end quote. And those words were way more aligned with Puritan thinking than they were with the thoughts of the Pilgrims. Remember, Puritan settlers in New England originally celebrated days of Thanksgiving in prayer, with food and feast playing little part, and yet they did give thanks to the, quote, good Lord for their successes in the New World. Remember, it was not until the middle of the Civil War that Abraham Lincoln proclaimed a national day of Thanksgiving to be celebrated on the last Thursday of November 1863, which happened to be November 26th, just as it is this year. Urged to do so by a series of editorials written by Sarah Josepha Hale, what Lincoln did with his proclamation was try to bring both families and a divided nation together, and he hoped to do so with something as simple as a meal shared and a joint prayer of thanks. Then in 1939, President Franklin D. Roosevelt moved the date up a week, setting Thanksgiving on the fourth Thursday of November, solely to lengthen the Christmas shopping season. But in 1941, Congress made an official holiday, doing away with the what had been a required annual presidential decree. And so this year, as we celebrate Thanksgiving, albeit a COVID dictated one, we must not lose sight of the true meaning of Thanksgiving, where we, as did the Pilgrims and Puritans, gather together with family and friends to share not just in nature's bounty, but to thank God the Father for all he has bestowed upon us and upon our great nation. And to that I say, amen.
You know, it's really interesting when you look at the actual history and you see how little bits and pieces were taken from this group and that group and another group, and then how literary license in a Longfellow poem, lent an air of the Puritans to the actions of the Pilgrims. And, you know, Sarah Josepha Hale, many years. You look at all the different writings, you look at all the different things that went into this. You know, what started as literally an economic adventure, mm-hmm. looking for some way to make some money and have the ability to control your own destiny,
right?
Turned into an annual Thanksgiving holiday.
Mm-hmm. And I actually think, the Civil War had more meaning to the Thanksgiving, because what Lincoln tried to do was bring a divided nation together. It wasn't just a divided nation, it was divided families. You had one brother on the side of the Union, another on this, the side of the Confederacy. I think it was more Lincoln that made it an American holiday,
right,
than it was a harvest feast.
Right. I fully agree. you look at that 1863 and you look at the situation the country was in with the Civil War, anything at all to bring a sense of togetherness and one thing that everybody could kind of get behind, that was Lincoln's idea. And it grew from that into what we see today. You know, before that, like you say in the piece, it was rather solemn occasion. You know, very leading solemn. Up to that. Yeah. That's certainly not the way it is now. You know, and Lincoln, I think, had everything to do with that.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
And that trip.
You know, FDR turned it into commercial by moving up an established date a week so shopping could be done.
Well, but again, you know, I know a lot of people kind of go, gee, really? You know, do we have to let commercialism into this? But when you think about it, commercialism was why the Pilgrims came here to begin with.
Yeah.
You know,
that could be taken both ways.
It does have that element to it when you look at the actual history of it. Folks, this is a really interesting article about the history of the first Thanksgiving. Now, Thanksgiving's coming up, and I know a lot of people that are listening are going to have family and friends over. So here's what you do. Go to rspradio1.com. You're going to find this right there on the homepage on Thanksgiving. Click into that. It'll take you over to Diane's blog. You can share the link. And why not read this out loud at your Thanksgiving celebration and let other people know what the actual history of the holiday is? You know, yeah. I mean, there's information here that I'll bet you hardly anybody in whatever group you're going to be with knows.
Right. The main thing is that, yes, it was a feast, a harvest feast, but it was primarily to celebrate the peace treaty between the Wampanoag Indians and the Pilgrims, I should say England, to be more precise.
And even that has drawn questions and scorn and ire from Native American groups and things over the years. And that's fodder for a whole different article.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but on that day in 1621, it was what it was.
Correct.
You know, and that's what we celebrate now in a very different way, but it's what we celebrate was what took place right then.
Exactly.
Very interesting. And that trip over on the Mayflower, that was no carnival cruise.
No.
Can you imagine a ship that small with over 100 people and all that cargo? Oh, my goodness.
And they couldn't even stand up in the bunks. And here's something interesting that I learned, but I didn't put it in. They had very little water on the trip.
Right.
What they brought with them was beer. And even children and babies were given beer because it was the only liquid that could withstand that kind of voyage.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, you know, not only are you seasick, but you're also hungover.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. Do you really want to make a trip like that for a month in those conditions, sober?
Well, I wouldn't do it, but
I mean, woof. You know, I mean, that was tough. These are tough people we're talking about here.
Yeah, they were.
You know, you gotta hand it to them. You know, maybe life wasn't exactly what they wanted when they were, you know, living in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
But that trip, you know, coming across, man, oh, man. And then coming to a place where none of them had ever been, where they didn't know how they were going to make it. They didn't know what they were walking into. I mean, these people put a lot on the line.
Yeah, they did. But it's also, you know, as you delve into the history, I didn't go into it in this article. The pilgrims weren't saint folks. You know, they weren't saints. They did pull some kind of dirty dealings on the Wampanoag Indians.
Well, they did. 30 years down the road, there was a big war, you know, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of ill feelings that came decades later. But on that day in 1621, everybody was getting along.
Right. You know? Right. And it is an American holiday. You know, it was the first one on American soil. But like I said, I really think its importance really derives from Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, that's where it got national attention, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it did. Folks, go to rspradio1.com. It's right there on the homepage on Thanksgiving. Click into that. Get to Diane's blog at the Patriot Factor and share that link everywhere. All right, we've gotten to the top of the hour. One segment left in the big Thanksgiving special. Hope you're ready to have a few laughs, folks, because we're getting there here in just a couple of minutes after the top of the hour break. Thanksgiving with COVID stuffing. More Right Side Patriots after this.
OTC is go.
Thank you, this is go.
OTC is go.
Copy us is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right Side Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome back to Right Side Patriots, the Thanksgiving special on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Tuesday night edition of the show, November 24th. Welcome to it. Folks, if you miss any part of the show or you just want to listen to it again, you can do that beginning tomorrow morning. If you go to rspradio1.com, podcast, that's the button you want to hit. You can be one of our pod people, and we love you for that. So all of our podcasts are on Podbean. They do a great job of keeping that archive cooking. So we appreciate Podbean very much. Okay, so now, folks, you have had a look at the actual history of the first Thanksgiving. You now know why the Pilgrims and the Puritans came here. You know how it all came to be. So we jump forward a few centuries, and here we are in 2020, the year that sucks out loud, and we're staring Thanksgiving right in the face. So, Diane, I thought, as long as you're giving the history, I'll give what people can expect in a couple of days.
And it isn't a pretty picture.
No, but I'll tell you, I had fun putting this together. You know, I really did. Thanksgiving with COVID stuffing. Thanksgiving, that magical holiday where family and friends gather for the feast of thanks. Turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, gravy, that green bean casserole, dinner rolls, and pumpkin pie. The thought of it makes one's mouth water and belt loosen. Every year, Thanksgiving is that one day we all look forward to with reckless abandon. Not just for the food, but for the time we get to spend with loved ones that we often don't get to see but once or twice a year. But hold on. In fact, hold everything. This is 2020, the Chinese year of the cluster F, and I think you know exactly what I mean. If you live in a blue state, or worse yet, in a blue city within a blue state, this year's Thanksgiving is going to suck out loud. In the state of Washington, a state deeper blue than a chess-playing IBM computer, and if you're not familiar with that analogy, look it up, you've got some COVID restrictions you will have to deal with. First off, Governor Jay Inslee has announced a mandate that requires you not to have anyone over for Thanksgiving that doesn't actually live in your home unless they have quarantined themselves for 14 days prior to their trip over the mountains and through the woods. That means there's no Thanksgiving reprieve in the state of Washington from the same people you see every day. You're stuck with the same old family members and no fresh stories to tell. Meanwhile, over in Oregon, there are also mandates bluer than a freezing Smurf. In Oregon, Governor Kate Brown, the chief Smurfette, has ordered that you have no more than 6 people at any indoor gathering, which includes any Oregonians' Thanksgiving dinner. That means that in Oregon, those wishing to hold a Thanksgiving family dinner will have to decide who within their families they like the best. Let's just say there's you, your spouse, and your 2 kids. That's 4 people. You'd plan to host your brother and your sister-in-law and their 3 kids. Maybe you like your sister-in-law better than you like your brother, so that's 1 out the door. But which of the kids do you prefer over the other 2? Diane, it's decisions, decisions, and they're not going to be easy decisions to make.
Well, they especially won't be easy decisions to make in the uber liberal, you know, hellhole known as California.
Well, yeah, or as I call it, the People's Republic of California. Mm-hmm. You see, that's where Governor Newsom has mandated that everybody inside your home must wear a mask this Thanksgiving. Imagine that, being told what you have to do inside your own home by the government. It's your home. It's your family. They're your friends. It should damn well be your choice as to whether or not everybody sitting around your table is wearing a face bra, but it's not. And if they catch you enjoying yourselves with naked faces, there's going to be hell to pay, not to mention the fines. In Chicago, Mayor Lori Beetlejuice Lightfoot called on residents in the Windy City to curb their social gatherings to 10 people at the most. She also suggested that residents stay home except for essential activities, you know, like going to work or the grocery store or, of course, shooting innocent bystanders on any given street corner. Naturally, if you're in Seattle, Portland, L.A., Chicago, maybe even Philly, and you're planning an Antifa riot, all bets and all mandates are off, and you can congregate as many goons and thugs as you want to burn, loot, and commit assaults to your heart's content. It's only the peace-loving family get-togethers that Blue Gestapo is concerned with. So, given this year's restrictions and mandates and downright draconian rules regarding the holiday of thanks, how can you get the most out of your gathering with your family and your friends and still remain safe from the rampaging COVIDs at the same time? Well, I'm glad you asked. Let's start with your guests. As they arrive, please provide to each one a nasal swab long enough to shove up their noses and touch their brains. Collect the samples and hang on to them for processing on Friday. You may not know in advance whether Aunt Mary was, in fact, COVID Mary, but at least you'll know later if you have to quarantine until you run out of leftovers. Because nobody really knows for sure when their virus is going to kick in, and because you won't have the results of the brain scrapings for another day or two before sitting down at the table, take everybody's temperature. The turkey should be at least 160 degrees. But your guests should not exceed 98.6. And while there are some newfangled thermometers you can buy, you know, Cousin Sally's Rugrats are going to be using those laser thermometers to terrorize the cat. Besides, you really don't want to trust the accuracy of those things. I say, go directly to the source and get the most spot-on reading of someone's temp as possible with an old, reliable rectal probe. Oh, I understand that nobody really wants to see Uncle Filbert shooting his full harvest moon anywhere near the dining room, but accuracy matters, and sometimes you just have to do what you have to do, right? I mean, look, as we all know, Uncle Frank tends to be a bit gassy. Diane, I say make him wear two masks. He can take the one off the bow while he's eating, but the aft mask will have to remain in place.
These, you know, as funny as these restrictions are, there are people that are panicking and are going to take temperatures of those entering their homes, or better yet, Thanksgiving is going to be outside socially distancing, you know, 6 feet to 12 feet away from someone you want to talk to. The whole thing is just ridiculous.
Hey, welcome to Thanksgiving dinner. Bend over and say aw. Mm-hmm. You know, look, I'm not really sure you can get COVID from a butt blast, but why take the chance? As for the meal itself, allow me to start with the place settings. This is not the year to use the good china. China gave us the plague, and there's no reason to glorify them with fancy eating dishes. Skip the everyday plates and the paper plates, too. Use serving platters. Yes, serving platters. That way you can socially distance your turkey from the yams, and the always popular green bean casserole can mind its own business away from the stuffing. Seating arrangements are going to be interesting. If you happen to have an open floor plan at your home, you can at least talk to each other. Now, for those with more traditional rooms, each individual family member or friend should be assigned their own room so as not to become super spreaders. At the table, one person at each end of the table is fine, but after that, one in the living room, one in the kitchen, one each in as many bedrooms as you have, and one in the laundry room. The more rooms you have, the more family and friends you can entertain. Put Uncle Frank, the gassy one, in the bathroom for what should, by now, be obvious reasons, and tell him that while he's dining in there, he can feel free to remove his rear-facing mask. I know what you're wondering. If folks are spread out all over the house like that, where do you put the food so people can get seconds? Well, that's easy. You place platters of food in central strategic locations, and then you set off an air horn blast as a warning whenever somebody gets up to refill their plate. Uncle Frank will announce his attentions his own way, and on the off chance that the platter central to your geographic location of the domicile is out of dinner rolls, do not try to forage from a different cache of food. Just eat something near you and be happy with that. Friends, you do have choices to make here. You can either follow these guidelines, which may seem a bit over the top because, let's face it, they are. And as soon as your feast of Thanksgiving is over, you can politely demand that all the Petri dishes you're related to or are friends with get the hell out of your house and go back to where they came from. Or you can skip all of this, have a really nice, normal gathering and meal, and then sit around afterwards with loosened belts, unzipped flies, scratching, belching, and doing your best impression of Uncle Frank while noshing on bits and pieces, Diane, of whatever might be left in the table scraps for as long as you like. Those are your choices here.
Well, actually, you should do whatever you damn well please in your own home. And if someone's going to report you, just kick them out of your house.
Absolutely. This is America, damn it. You should celebrate the holiday the way you choose. COVID be damned, and if the government does, as Diane says, come over and be killjoys at your house, let Uncle Frank answer the door. And then show him a copy of the First Amendment, where it clearly states that we all have the right to peaceably assemble, regardless of Uncle Frank's condition. Thanksgiving is all about fun, food, fellowship, and creating memories. And letting Uncle Frank answer the door that way will be a story your grandkids will be telling their grandkids 50 years from now. In my own family, our version of Uncle Frank was in fact my Aunt Bertha, who, like Jupiter, was a rather large gaseous orb with her own gravitational force, and she was often beset with clearly audible tear-inducing methane emissions, which could have easily been deployed to disperse a riot. Aunt Bertha once fell asleep in a rocking chair after a rather hearty Thanksgiving dinner, and each inhaling snore was followed by a resounding back-alley bugle blast. Aunt Bertha's been gone for decades, but the memories of Aunt Bertha linger. Happy Thanksgiving with COVID stuffing.
Funny. It's funny, but there is a monica of truth in there.
There's a lot of truth in there. In fact, that story about my Aunt Bertha is 100% true.
Well, I'm not talking about your Aunt Bertha, but I'm talking about the stupid, asinine rules some of these governors have put in place.
I mean,
if I lived in those states, I wouldn't follow one damn bit of them.
I mean, they're in California, they're actually asking people to turn in their neighbors.
I know. What if you notice Germany here or Fidel's Cuba?
Yeah, no. If you see your neighbors have more than six or seven people over their house on Thanksgiving, you need to call the cops. Well, let me tell you something. I would hope the cops have something better to do than bust up Thanksgiving dinners.
Better yet, I hope the cops would refuse to bust up Thanksgiving dinners.
I know in a lot of places like Wisconsin, you know, their governor said, oh, no, we're going to have all these restrictions on Thanksgiving. But the sheriffs in Wisconsin are saying, don't look at us, because we're not going to enforce any of this crap.
Right. Yeah. Well, we don't have to worry about it here with Governor DeSantis. We can do whatever the hell we want on Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, like I said earlier in the show, our governor here, Pete Ricketts, we may be in Thanksgiving restriction land come tomorrow or possibly Thursday, in which case you're not supposed to have more than 10 people at any indoor gathering. That's going to include your Thanksgiving. What about the people that have already made the trip to be at grandparents' house or some family member's house where there's going to be 15, maybe 20 people? You know, what do you do when you're going to slap these restrictions in place at the last freaking minute, and you've already got people there?
Right. You let them in and say, screw these stupid rules, because these rules are stupid. Basically, what these governors are doing, and it's a plot, folks, they do not want herd immunity to kick in, because if that happens, they lose the power of COVID.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, if my Aunt Bertha died in 2002, and if she was still here, I'd be renting her out. I would, because that woman could clear a room. My sister used to call her Aunt Bear because she resembled a large dancing bear.
Oh, you're so mean to your dead aunt.
No, well, I mean, she called her that when she was alive. Okay.
Well, still.
My Aunt Bertha had a brilliant sense of humor, but she was a wee bit overbearing. Okay. I referred to her as the Salad Queen of Pennsylvania. Because whenever Aunt Bertha came to visit, you had to have roughage at every meal. Which I think was honestly part of her problem. to be perfectly honest. But, oh, my God. And I mean, I would tell my friends stories of Aunt Bertha. And they go, oh, she can't really be like that. And I'm like, come on over for dinner tonight. Then my friends would tell Aunt Bertha stories after that. You know, but folks, you just gotta look at this thing, and you gotta say, look, we can either abide by all these draconian, insane rules and regulations and mandates and lockdowns, or we can just say screw it and enjoy the holiday, enjoy our lives.
Yeah, I've come to take COVID as, I know it's out there, and I know it's serious, and I'm not making light of the disease or the people that have been affected by it. However, I'm trying to live as normal life as possible, and so are the people in my part of Florida here. I mean, you'll see people, we're tired of the masks. We wear them up to a point. You know, in California, they want you to put them back on if you're in a restaurant in between, you know, your bites of food. That ain't happening here, and it won't happen here.
How can you possibly eat like that? How can anybody possibly eat a meal like that?
Well, you know what? If you're stupid enough to take these Democrat leaders at face value and what they're telling you to do, you'll do it.
It's crazy.
If you understand the nature of a virus, you're not going to do it.
You know, I mean, I'm reading virus stories in my local news all the time. You know, I look at them. I decide whether or not it's actually worth reading one. Now, you know, like I said, our governor's thinking about reinstituting these restrictions in the next day or two. So, yeah, put that in the news. Most of the time, I just ignore the stories because, my God, it's the same crap day in and day out.
Right. Nothing changes. And the thing is, yes, there are more cases being diagnosed. But for every case that's being diagnosed as positive, they're finding out people come back a day or two later and the positive was a negative.
Well, and I go back this a couple of weeks ago, Elon Musk, I think everybody knows Elon Musk by now, right? SpaceX and Tesla and, you know, all that. He took 4 COVID tests in one day. 2 were positive, 2 were negative.
Right. Right. I mean, this is ridiculous. And he did miss his own moon launch because, you know, the last one was a positive, was a positive one. And he couldn't go.
Well, and you wonder how many positive tests are really positive?
Well, you also, you know, realize that many people that are dying with COVID are not dying of COVID. But according to the numbers, they are.
Well, it is pretty much anybody who dies of anything now is dying of COVID. I mean, that's kind of what we're being told. If you jump out of an airplane and your parachute doesn't open, you hit the ground at terminal velocity, 120 miles an hour, in a concrete parking lot, by God, you just died of COVID.
Well, here in Florida, last week, we had a guy, he had COVID, but he was one of the ones that had basically no symptoms. And he was up on a ladder clearing out leaves from his gutter. He fell off the ladder, cracked his head and died. They didn't list him as dying from falling off a ladder. They listed him as dying from COVID until certain Florida people stepped in and said no. And this is happening too often across the country, folks. The majority of people who get COVID are asymptomatic or it's the uncommon cold. And again, not making light of the people that do get, you know, seriously ill from it. But that's not the majority.
You know, and technically, technically, falling off a ladder, the act of falling off of something like that, is not what kills you. It's a sudden stop at the end.
Yes. That's, slamming your head into the into the driveway. Yeah, I can see that.
From a technical standpoint, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm just saying. You know,
but you play one on the radio.
From time to time, yeah. You know. that's why I say, look, if you want the most accurate temperature reading of your guests, it ain't with one of those laser things.
No.
Those are great cat toys. Outside
of
that.
Yeah, they are. Cats love them.
You know, outside of that, you got to go straight to the source. The source in this case would be rspradio1.com, the homepage. That's where you'll find Thanksgiving with COVID stuffing. You click there, it takes you to my blog at the National Patriot. Share the link everywhere. Have some laughs, because God knows we need a few laughs right now.
We do. Everything is so serious. Everything, well, it should be, as far as the election, the COVID-19 coronavirus, whatever you want to call it. I like calling it, you know, China's little gift to us. I mean, we're coming into holiday season now full strength. It starts with Halloween, but it really kicks into gear with Thanksgiving. And what do you think? People are actually going to stay home on Friday and not do their Black Friday shopping? And by the way, I'm surprised, you know, Black Lives Matter hasn't, you know, been in an uproar about
Diane,
Black Friday.
Don't give them any ideas.
I know.
Those people are obnoxious enough as it is. They don't need help.
That's true.
Good Lord.
I mean, snow is racist. It's white.
Well, it is as it falls. After it's been sitting in the curb for a couple of days, not so much.
True.
You know. But that will end, too, if Biden becomes the president, because nobody will be driving cars anymore. Those will be illegal.
Let him try to take away my 8-cylinder gas guzzler. Let him try.
I'm just saying, you know, under a Biden presidency, anything that you put gas into is going to be illegal.
That's true. You better have a lot of outlets.
You know,
better have an outlet in your garage, folks.
We just got a couple of minutes left here. I just got to tell you, I saw a commercial on TV for some electric car, and I don't even know what car it was. But the person that was given the narration said it takes 2 hours and 15 minutes, and you can drive another 520 miles.
Oh, God.
Now, I'm thinking, you know, my car, my van, it will not go 520 miles on a tank of gas, but it'll go a little over 400. But it only takes me 5 minutes to fill it up, and I'm back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If I'm on a long road trip, what am I going to do at a gas station with a charging machine for 2.5 freaking hours?
It's ridiculous. Electric cars are ridiculous.
And has anybody who thinks that the electric car is the answer to all the problems, have they ever stopped to wonder where the electricity in the charging station is coming from?
I was just thinking that.
Have you ever seen a solar panel next to one of those things? Nope.
No. Don't give them ideas. Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Folks, look, it's Tuesday. Thanksgiving is this Thursday. We're off this Friday and next Tuesday, and then we'll be back on December 4th. But, you know, It's Thanksgiving. Enjoy the holiday. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy the food. You know, whatever you're doing. Whatever, if you live in a state where there's a restriction to the number of people you can have at your Thanksgiving gathering, exceed it.
Absolutely.
That is my advice. Double it. Screw Absolutely. Them. You know? But I hope everybody gets out and has a little bit of fun. Stretch the weekend, you know, Thanksgiving Thursday, take Friday off, enjoy Saturday and Sunday.
You know Decorating time.
Decorating time. But with that, Diane, you and I have come to the end of the show tonight. RSPRadio1.com, that's where you want to go. You can grab Diane's article, you can grab mine. Share those links everywhere you can. That's all we ask.
Yes.
And with that, Diane, it's time to say goodnight.
Good night, guys, and happy Turkey Day.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you on December 4th. Party like you mean it.